Welcome, Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast. This is number 56, isn't it? Holy cow.
56, magic number.
We have come a long way, haven't we?
Long, long time.
Yes. Thank you, friends, for listening. It is your pals, Mario and Brian. Mario, how's it going?
Going good. I can't believe it's 56. I'm feeling old now.
It's 56. It's the end of June. It's almost July. It's, time is flying. That is definitely for sure. Time is flying.
Getting closer and closer to ski season. I can feel it.
That's right. We are fully into almost ski season right now. So thank you guys for joining us on this this journey today. You know, you can check out more information about us at skibumpodcast.com and send us an email, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, and instagram.com/skibumpodcast.
So, Brian, what's going to be our topic today?
Well, we mentioned it last week on the podcast that we were going to go to the Cannabis Business Expo in New York City. So we're talking about cannabis meaning business, because that's what it is and that's what it does. And there's definitely a tie-in between the cannabis industry and skiing, because if you've noticed, most of the best places to go skiing in the United States have also legalized or had medical marijuana available. So the two seem to go pretty hand in hand. So we checked it out. We got press passes. We were able to talk to some people, go to some seminars, and we figured we would report back to you guys, give you guys some more information.
All right. If my nephew's listening, time to shut off or fast forward a little bit. Pass the cannabis.
Just saying.
Which means you can listen. Listen to this. Talk to your teachers until you're 18 years old.
Exactly. Exactly.
All that good stuff. Not good for a developing brain, like a lot of other things.
Exactly. But in the meantime. It's that time again.
Yes. Weekly flavor time. Now, we are recording this on a Monday, and we're kind of taking it easy today.
Yeah, if we recorded it later, I might have gone a happy hour or did a little something more, I don't know, more interesting than my weekly flavor this week. But this is what we got. Got a work day tomorrow. Got to get stuff done today.
That's true. It's a busy week.
So, Brian, what are you starting out with?
Oh, I am drinking Hoboken's Finest Public City Water right now.
Wow. Filtered or non-filtered?
Filtered, of course. So many vitamins, so many minerals. You just can't beat it. See, you know what? It's one of those things. They talk about New York City water being so great. Hoboken water, almost the same thing. Breads, pizzas, all that stuff. It's amazing from here. So they're doing something right with the water.
It's like drinking from a fresh, clean springtime stream, right?
A springtime stream coming out of a fire hydrant, perhaps.
Excellent, excellent. So, me, myself, I have a Zyko chocolate-flavored coconut water beverage. Now, it's not coconut water. It's a coconut water beverage. I don't know why they call it like that. But
such is that almost like a Cheetos or like a cheese product?
Yeah. It's a cheese-flavored coconut water.
Yummy.
Now, it's actually really good. I like these. These are coconut water is good for you. Hydrate. H2O.
Those are tasty. Yeah, I guess the one thing you got to watch out with those coconut waters is sometimes they throw some extra sugar in there.
Yeah, that's why.
Which nobody really needs. Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, 20 grams of sugar. So this is pretty.
20 grams? Damn.
Yeah. So this is good for. Usually, this is a good recovery drink. Although it has zero protein, which that's the thing I have against like almond milk or anything like that. There's no protein in it.
Yeah. Well, you got to mix it some protein powder in there or have a piece of steak in there.
Milk right from the udder, man. Right from the udder.
Right from the udder.
I've been drinking that Fairlife milk because it's like basically filter out some of the sugar. You'll find out. I'll find out in a few years. It's probably bad for you, but low sugar, high protein, which is tastes pretty good too. So,
oh, very nice. What's it called? Fairlife.
Fairlife, and they carry it like everywhere. I found it at ShopRite, Fairway Market, Stop and Shop. Like they have it everywhere, I think now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, check it out. Check that out.
Yeah, Fairlife milk.
Yeah, my brother, he's having problems with his sugar, and I told him to try to do it, because if you look at the exchange, if you're diabetic or close to diabetic or just watching, I think it has like almost half the sugar and twice the protein.
Wow.
And all they do is they filter it with some freaky technology method or something.
Oh, boy.
So it's regular milk. It's just, and it's lactose free and all that other stuff too.
So they're mixing with like that Soylent stuff?
Soylent Green.
Soylent Green.
It's people. Oh, it's awesome.
Nice.
All right. And now next up.
It's time.
You hear that time sound?
Time for the Honky Tonk Ski News.
Oh, yeah.
So first up, 2015-2016 ski season. Best on record for Colorado. Nice. So the Colorado Ski Country USA announced last week that skier visits at its 21-member resorts totaled 7.4 million in 2015-2016, up by nearly 5% compared to last year's membership season total, and a new record for visitation.
Wow.
Additionally, 2015-2016 visit total bested the five-year average by more than 10%, making it the third consecutive year skier visits have outpaced the five-year average.
Wow.
So, I mean, obviously having a ton of snow makes a big difference. And considering what a great year Colorado had, that definitely helped them out with people coming out and visiting and going skiing.
Wow. And they actually said the whole entire industry went up 5%. That's what you said before? It's not just Colorado. Because that's even with the shitty weather we had here in the East, right?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think it was 0.05%.
Oh, 0.05. So, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's very, very, like, what is it, a 0.05%? So.
Yeah.
But considering, yeah, what a miserable, you know, season it was in the Northeast, which is the most populated area, it's still pretty good that it's going up.
Well, we were talking a few weeks ago about indoor snowmaking, but just snowmaking in general has become such a big, like, technological advancement that it's a lot easier and more efficient to blow snow.
Yeah, it's becoming a necessity too, because you just don't know, you know, if you need snow for your business, which is the ski mountain, the ski industry, you got to figure out how to have snow. You know, if there's no snow on the road, you got to make snow on the mountain. So it's becoming mandatory. I mean, look at Vermont coming up in November, you know, with the World Cup, the Women's World Cup ski event.
You know,
November can be a little dicey up there, so they're gonna find a way to make sure there's snow on that mountain.
And oddly enough, blown snow is not really that bad for skiing. I mean, it's really good for a base, that's for sure.
Oh yeah.
You know, so.
Hey man, fake snow is better than no snow.
That's right.
Right.
Could be either sitting in a parking lot bitching about snow or skiing on fake snow. I'm good with that.
I'll take that fake snow any day.
It's better than it used to be. Remember years ago, you used to hit the fake snow and just kind of stop. It was like very dense. Now it's different.
Yeah, all the new snowmaking technology they have has really improved the quality of the snow. So, yeah, it's getting to be almost like the real thing.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
It's awesome.
All right, next up.
All right, so next up, you know, it's funny. I came across this in an article. We were talking, and it talks about, do you know who owns your favorite ski resort? And kind of like when you start looking at, we always talk about beers and who owns the microbrews, because everybody thinks, oh, wow, this is a cool beer. It's you know, it's a small company. And then you find out, like, InBev bought them a few years ago, or, you know, Molson Coors.
Selling out to the man.
That's right, selling out. So ski resorts are actually, they've become the same way. And there's, like, probably, what do we have listed here, about six or seven big conglomerates that own almost all the big ski areas. So you start off with like Vail Resorts, and of course we know they own Vail, Beaver Creek, Beckman Ridge, Keystone, Park City, which is huge. They own 11 in North America, but that doesn't include their properties and stuff they have like elsewhere. So all these companies have like hands in like all the stuff that goes in. Powder's another big one. That's our home mountain right now is Killington. They're owned by them. Copper, Eldora, Mount Bachelor. Hey, ski club's going there this year.
Yeah.
So I wonder if we're looking to see about passes for that. They run a deal or something if you have a season pass.
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, you talk about, you know, selling out and, you know, big conglomerates owning the mountains. The one nice thing is with that economies of scale, you know, if they do have to purchase snowmaking equipment, they're going to buy, you know, they can purchase more of it, get a lower price, and not have to pass as much of that burden on to the skiers, which, you know, that's one of the positives of it. And plus, and as well, like you mentioned too, the passes, You know, if they have, you know, like the Epic Pass, you know, it's a bunch of the different Vail Mountains that they're combining. And, you know, there's a couple of those different passes that we've talked about. And we should probably do an episode this summer at some point talking about the different passes that are available for the upcoming season. But yeah, a lot of them are clumped together based on their parent company, which does make it good for, you know, if you're, you know, you live by Stratton, Vermont, and you get the pass for the IntraWest has some sort of pass, then you can go to Blue Mountain, Ontario, West Virginia, you know, Tremblant, Winter Park. You know, there's a bunch of different things that are, that kind of open up to you as a, you know, a local at one of those, you know, that conglomerate's family of resorts.
Right. Well, it's funny, like you say, like, you know, the ownership, there's you know, economies of scale, but like it works in your favor and sometimes not in your favor. Cause we have a friend that used to go to Stratton. They go to Stratton a lot. And they said when IntraWest bought Mountain Creek, they were putting a ton of money in Mountain Creek. And they used to like have comments about like, oh yeah, all the money's going there that they're making elsewhere. You know what I mean?
That's part of the rub too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean,
it's definitely both sides of the coin on this.
Yeah. And it's just normal course of business. You're going to, you know, share the wealth among your properties and do the best you can. But let's see, Boyne Resorts.
I never even heard of Boyne, and I'm looking at their list, and considering all the Michigan and Maine and New Hampshire resorts they have,
yeah,
they probably had a pretty rough last year.
Well, Loon, Sunday River, and Sugarloaf. Those are like the big ones that pop for me. Cypress I've heard before. Oh, Big Sky, Montana, of course. That's probably the biggest one.
Yeah, that's a monster. And then Brighton, Utah is decent. You know, what is it, Squamish Summit at Squamish Resort in Washington? They obviously had a great year last year, as did Cypress in British Columbia. So, you know, that's part of the thing too. Keeping a company afloat, you got to diversify your ski.
Spread it
resorts
out.
Just it's like you got to diversify your bonds.
Diversify. Yeah. Oh, and then IntraWest. IntraWest is huge. Steamboat. I didn't realize they owned Steamboat, but Steamboat, Winter Park, Tremblant, Stratton. Snowshoe, I didn't realize they owned Snowshoe, and then Blue Mountain, Ontario.
I feel like, didn't IntraWest used to own a bunch more stuff?
They used to have, I know, well, around us, they had Mountain Creek. I thought they had another big one I thought they sold off. I don't remember what it was, though.
I thought they had a lot more different resorts at one point. But, you know, a lot of these companies, too, they'll, you know, they'll sell off a few, then they'll add a few more and, you know, go back and forth with their offerings.
Yeah, it's kind of like they grab a property, they drop a property. Like I'm sure it goes around, right?
Yeah, and then Peak Resorts, you know, they're another one of the, you know, pretty massive. They have 14 different ski resorts in North America. Now they have the Peak Pass that they offer,
yes,
which I think we've talked about before. They have a bunch of, you know, smaller resorts that they own. But they have those Peak Rewards passes, or I forget exactly the name of it. I think it's the Peak Pass.
The Peak Pass, yeah.
Where you get, I think, was it five? You can buy your regular season pass at whatever your mountain is, and you get like 5 days for like $200. You can get 5 days at all these other resorts.
Yeah.
5 days each at each resort, which is, you know, if you're going to be moving around a lot and checking out a lot of different areas, that would be a great pass to have.
Well, they own a Hunter, and I think that was a recent acquisition, right? That was just sold a few years ago.
I think it was a few months ago.
Because Hunter, I'm surprised to see that there. They have Mount Snow, Jack Frost, Big Boulder. So that's all Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Wildcat, Crotched. Then a bunch of them in Ohio.
Attitash, too, in New Hampshire.
Attitash, New Hampshire. So, yeah, it's interesting. Aspen's the other one. So Aspen has to have some kind of, well, then again, it's Aspen. Snowmass, Buttermilk, and Aspen.
They don't have to do nothing.
That's right. And then there's a weird one, CNL Lifestyle Properties. So they don't operate any of the ski resorts it owns. So I guess they just own them, have somebody else run them. And they're saying it was set up as a real estate trust to hold the ski resorts. And as its timeline winds down, they're actually going to try to find buyers for all the properties, which is very strange. Ooh. I guess they're just a holding company.
Yeah.
So Loon's on Loon, Jiminy Peak, Cypress Mountain West, Crested Butte, Brighton. I mean, some pretty Akemo.
Must be nice to be in the Mueller family.
Yeah. North Star.
The family owns three ski resorts.
That's crazy. North Star is another one. Sunday River. So it's really weird. I guess they have this. It's almost like venture capital, right?
It's almost, you almost wonder what sort of like shady things have to go on for you to purchase a ski resort, you know, as like a family or something.
We are the Mueller family. We have some resorts.
Yeah. They're all like tax shelters.
Yeah.
Embezzling money.
Hey, it's better than dumping your money offshore, right? Dumping into a ski area.
Sure.
Hold on.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, so check it out. Check out the list. It's just interesting. It's a little eye-opening. And like Brian said, you know, you could try to see if they run deals between the resorts or like in, you know, conjunction with each other. So go to the parent site and see if there's some kind of deal or a shared pass you can get, especially this time of year before when everything early is going on sale. Sometimes these passes you can't get when the ski season hits. You got to get them early.
This is true. Do it.
So what do
All
you got
right, next. What do we got next? Let's see. Next up, we have End of an Era, 10 banging ski videos from the final West Coast session. So one of the ski's most badass events, West Coast Session, said farewell to the ski community last month with its 10th and final offering at Mount Hood. So it's like an anti-competition.
I like that.
But they have
anti-competition.
Yeah, it's really just a bunch of you know, ski folks just putting together, you know, teams putting together their ski videos, you know, doing all kinds of great tricks and grabs and 180s and I kind of read it a little bit, but I don't know, why are they stopping this? Like, did you get into the article enough to figure that out?
Well, they did make a comment saying that the anti-competition vibe is cool, but it doesn't make money. So I think that's why they might be closing shop. So,
oh, there you go.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's great, but then how do they keep running these events or sponsor, you know? So I don't know. It's interesting.
It's kind of a bummer. Yeah. Cause you know, again, it seems like it's a really fun event and it's, people have a great time and it's, you know, they're enjoying it, but yeah, with the lack of competition, I guess you're not getting a medal. You're not getting, you know, whatever accolades you need. So you can't make it, you can't get more sponsors or you can't keep the money. I don't know. I don't quite understand that. I mean, I understand it, but I don't, my brain almost doesn't want to comprehend it, you know?
Yeah. Well, they don't say in this article why they're shutting it down. So I don't know, maybe it's somebody doesn't want to run it or who knows, but it's basically just, they have all the videos on it, which are really cool.
They are pretty cool. Yeah. If you go to a free skier, we'll have it on our website too, but yeah, it shows all the different videos. Some of them are just like kind of weird, but they're really well done.
Yeah, it's cool to see people doing that stuff, you know?
Yeah, each team has like, you know, 10, some have like up to 6 people, some have like 15 people. And yeah, it's some crazy stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Good entertainment, especially this time of year when it's hot as balls out. You get to watch some fresh skiing out there.
Yeah, Team Dankers.
Team Dankers.
Team Dankers.
Stop guac and roll.
Stop guac and roll. Nice. All right, next up.
All right, Jackson Hole.
We've heard of that place.
We've heard of that place. So Jackson Hole, there's an article that Forbes wrote about Jackson Hole being the most economically unequal city in America.
Way to go, Jackson Hole.
So Forbes did this article. I did a little, you know, they did a little research, and they said the economical unequal city in America, the number one ranked out of all the ones that they looked at, was Jackson, Wyoming. They're saying in both Teton counties, Wyoming and Idaho, the top 1% of earners bagged 68.3% of the income, and the bottom 90% took home just a little bit over 17%. So that is
so filthy.
68.3% went to the top 1%. So that's pretty crazy. So they said it put this ski town ahead of most unequal, ahead of the next most unequal city, which was Bridgeport, Stamford, Norwalk area in Connecticut.
That's some Bobby Axelrod area up there.
Yeah, I mean, they have some really nice areas in Connecticut, but It's just insane.
But you know what? Yes, like Stamford and Norwalk, like that's where all the hedge fund people are. But Bridgeport is a shithole.
Really?
Like it is a dump and a half. Yeah.
Well, I guess
so.
That too.
I was talking about the difference, the unequal ratio, the metro areas. You know, like there's the super wealthy and the super poor. But yeah, it says it can't even touch Jackson.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That is great. So I like the comment they put in there in the article is so again, Forbes confirms really, really, really rich people live in Jackson Hole.
Yep. Well, when we were out there, that's what everybody was saying to us. You know, they said the billionaires are kicking out the millionaires.
Yeah, even when we were there, it's funny. Like, so we did our backcountry day with Tommy Moe, and you know, it was cool talking to him. He was telling us about the local area. He's been there for a long time. And
name dropping. But Tommy Moe.
It was funny. So he's a celebrity, and there was another guy that was there. I guess you know they just knew each other for a while. It was before we started the day. We were waiting for everybody, and I guess they had a card game the night before, so they're just, you know, shooting the breeze, like, oh, did you stay for a while? He's like, yeah, I hung out for a while, and then I had to go, and, you know, lost a little money, whatever. And the one guy was telling him, was like, yeah, the one guy that was there, he owns two basketball teams, like NBA basketball teams. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here?
Who are these people?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, you think somebody's just hanging out, you know, playing cards or at a bar or whatever, and then you find out, like, yeah, they're filthy rich. It's crazy.
So. Yeah, I mean, again, too, you know, one of the things that, you know, we always do whenever we go out to a great, you know, an area that we really like. You know, you go on vacation, you're like, oh, this is an awesome area. What does it cost to live here? So one of the things we did was we looked up on Trulia, you know, how much, you know, a townhouse, you know, a house in the area would cost.
The smallest little shack in the world, right?
We saw a dumpy bungalow in the town of Jackson. It was $975,000. And it was a dump. Like, it was nothing special about it except where it was sitting.
I don't even think it was 800 square foot. It was tiny.
I mean, it was a 3-bedroom, mind you. But, again, it was a dumpy bungalow. And
it was small, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's, you know, and it sucks in a way. It's, well, not in a way. It just sucks in general, really, because think about trying to be like a ski bum in that town. Like, how do you even live out there? You know, it's not even possible. And you know what? I know it's all because of the economics of the state and the tax loopholes and, you know, how much money you can save by living out there. But it's just wasted on these assholes, really. Because think about it. It's a hardcore ski area. And how many people who can make billions of dollars are able to, you know, be physically and, you know, dedicated to skiing enough to spend the time there, you know, and want to get better at skiing. They want to get better at, you know, being Wall Street assholes or hedge fund whatevers, you know, like they don't have time to really be badass skiers. They'll go there once a year for a weekend. And, you know, I was talking about, you know, Silicon Valley and, you know, the show, and they were showing the two tech CEOs. They were, you know, they meet up at the airport. They see each other at the airport. They're taking their private jets out to Jackson Hole. And the guy's like, oh, I didn't know you still had a house out there. He's like, yeah, I have it. I just never go. You know, just people just adding to their portfolio, buying something somewhere awesome where there's a tax loophole, saving themselves money by doing so, and screwing over the general ski populace because of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, too, it's like when we were in Telluride the year before, we saw all that construction going on because it's like there's definitely all limited space. They're not building, you know, they're not opening up land for sprawl. So you have this fixed limited space that you can own and build on. So it's kind of like it's a fight after a while for like increasing price of housing. So it's like, yeah, what used to be, you know, of course, $500,000, just nothing's changed with it. It's just it's higher in demand. So now it's $1 million or $1.5 million, you know, it's crazy.
Simple supply and demand, right?
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, to be a ski lifty. I remember talking to them I think it was in Telluride. And they were saying that basically there's like 3 to 4 of them living in like a 1-bedroom apartment. And they just bunk up and then they work all different hours. And it's kind of just weird, but that's just the lifestyle.
And they love it probably, yeah.
Yeah,
and also,
yeah.
We talked to those guys in Jackson, right? Weren't they saying that one of the big things out there is that some of the ski bums out there, they'll work as house sitters,
yeah,
for the wintertime.
Caretakers,
right? So caretakers, yeah. So some, you know, rich dude has his house, and I'll pay you, $1,000 a month. You just stay here and make sure the snow is cleared and, nothing, the hot water heater doesn't explode, the pipes don't freeze, that kind of thing.
They make sure that like some of the work that this schedule gets done, and some of them do a little carpentry. It's interesting.
Yeah, and that seems like a really great way if you can do like a freelance job or you work remote to be able to, if you can double dip and be a caretaker and also do your freelance or working remote, that might be a nice way to be living your life.
Yeah. Well, I told you before we went out to Jackson, my buddy Gary, who used to be a bum out in Colorado, he said one of his buddies is a caretaker in Jackson. And he got back to
That's what it was, yeah.
Well, no, he got back to him like 3 weeks after we got back from our trip, because he said, he's not there in the winter. He only goes and he stays there for the summer, because I guess the owners go in the winter and then they leave it. So he lives in California and then goes over to Jackson to work, quote unquote, in the summer.
Hey, either way you could do it. Any way to get out there, it's, it's a good gig if you can get it.
And, it's pretty interesting work, from what a few people said is they almost do like general contract. I mean, they're running like the house. So it's like, there needs to be like all these upgrades done that they want in the summer when they're not there. So they kind of watch and make sure it gets done. I mean, that's what you're getting paid to do. And they work for other companies. So it's interesting.
I think we need to make that part of our product offering. Highfalutin ski bum, ski house, ski watching, house watching for the wintertime.
Yeah, we got a lot of services we're offering, including like ski sherping, weed delivery. Like, we got a lot on our plate right now. We're going to have to.
There really isn't much we won't do to ski more.
That's right.
Let's be honest.
Just
a couple of ski boards.
Let's break it down.
Just ski boards. That's all we are.
That's right.
Bunch of whores.
Filthy whores.
All right. So, I think that wraps up our ski news
for
the week, huh? We're still finding plenty of good news in the summertime.
And, not only that, like, another thing in ski news we talk about all the time is all the planning that goes on. So there's been a lot of work and a lot of planning and a lot of rumors about trips. Our ski club announced a few trips. So there's already talk about that. There's already talk about what plans everybody's going to do. So I kind of like – so, I mean, we get into the meat of summer, and that's when we start doing most of the planning.
Yeah, it's not even 4th of July. I already have some itinerary for ski trips. It's a beautiful thing.
I'm saying the magic starts now.
Ski season never ends.
I mean, just bought our season passes. Well, was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, season passes have been procured. Now it's time to buy some gear this summer.
Yeah, already talking to our buddy, Joe at Backcountry, who's he's a gearhead. He's our gearhead specialist since we're highfalutin.
That's right. We have a gearhead specialist.
That's right. So he's giving us advice on we're chatting with him about bumming and vacations. He's giving us some advice on gear and stuff. So learning about
he's
some
definitely
of the new stuff.
He's definitely bumming it better than we are.
Yeah.
We have to give him that.
He actually has a job, lives in Utah, and does backcountry out of his local area. I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah, he's doing it right.
But it's good to have a friend on the inside.
We have our podcast empire.
Huh?
That's true. And we have our podcast empire, so, we have to maintain that for now.
That's right. We need somebody to give us fresh new product reviews. He actually gave us a tip on something that's coming out, a new ABS avalanche pack that's coming out. It seems pretty cool. We got to find out more info, and then we'll share it.
Nice. Right now we got to propagate and horticulturize our little podcast here, which leads us right into our topic for the week.
For the week.
Do we have any?
Let's see. The music is not cooperating.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
This is just going off the rails here.
It's going off the rails.
That's all right. You know the music.
It's going. It's going.
Yeah.
Yeah. This thing doesn't want to cooperate. So.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, the topic this week is cannabis means business.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, there it is. You know what? I like my remix better.
Yeah.
I like my remix better.
Like that remix. All right, so we're talking about the cannabis the Cannabis Expo, we have something that came up recently. You want to talk about the Ohio thing?
Yeah, we'll talk about the actual event first.
All right. So it was the Cannabis World Conference and Expo. Like a business-to-business conference, you would say, right?
Yeah, definitely.
We
like an industry conference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we went in. We went in as press since we were covering it for the show, and we had like full access to a lot of people, which was really cool to do. But they had a bunch of keynotes, which we did miss because we wound up going pretty late. Who was there? We had
So some of the big names. I mean, the biggest name obviously was Gary Johnson, presidential. Independent Party presidential candidate this year. He was there he did the keynote on Thursday, I believe. It was cool. I mean, he used to be the CEO. I got to look it up. I forget the name. There was one cannabis company that he was the CEO Normal? Of.
Oh, no.
No, yeah. Not Normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, I think it was it. Was it CBD? Let me see. Gary Johnson, CEO. Cannabis Sativa Inc. So yeah, he was the CEO of Cannabis Sativa Inc. He is currently running as the Libertarian Party candidate, and there was some crazy study that said he was actually at polling at 9%.
Oh wow.
Which, I mean, again, he's got some really good ideas. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast a couple weeks ago. He was the former governor of New Mexico. You know, he has some legitimate credentials, in his, you know, on his resume, but he again, it's one of those things. Like, it could be one of those times where, you know, people are terrified of Trump, people are terrified of Clinton. Someone like him could roll in, say the right things, and you know, kind of make things difficult for them.
Hmm. Yeah, that's kind of like betting on the, you know, 120-1. Odds horse in the Kentucky Derby.
It definitely is. It definitely is. No. But again, he's obviously got a history where he's, you know, worked for these companies. He was the CEO there for 2 years, and now he's a presidential candidate. So you have legitimate people who are speaking at these conferences now, where it used to be something in the shadows that people didn't want to talk about. We were all just yelling, "Just say no," like a bunch of freaking you know, yeah. Dummies, not really listening to the stories and the behind it, just kind of yelling at the catchphrase.
Right.
And this wasn't,
you know, seeing this conference up close. Like, I know some of our friends mentioned to us, like, "Oh, you're going to a cannabis conference. Ha ha, that's pretty funny. And you're going to smoke up and all." It's like, no. Like, it's a real conference on, like, a real industry. And it's getting notoriety, like Brian said, but I think there's still that naivety that, oh yeah, you're just going there, it's all about smoking, and you see the big smoke outs out west, you know, those big parties that people have. And it's like, no, it's nothing like that. It's medical marijuana. They talk about a lot of legal issues. It was very boring if you're looking for any of the sensationalized stuff, you know?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't like a freaking like Cheech and Chong movie or anything, you know? It wasn't like Half-Baked. It was nothing like that. I mean, it was, you know, these are legitimate people who are, you know, using this industry in its infancy to start creating, you know, serious wealth empires.
Yeah.
You know, really what I got from it. You know, we went to a couple of the different seminars, and but my favorite one was that first one that we went to.
Yeah, the greenhouse planning with Eric Branstad.
Yeah, he comes from a farming family, and he's pretty much a consultant and goes and meets with these people who want to set up greenhouses, and talking about, you know, just how much goes into it and all the different research and, you know, the way they've, you know, just been able to, you know, find so many new efficiencies and different ways of doing things to get, you know, maximum growth. I think he was saying that, you know, a regular plant, if you had a regular cannabis plant and you were growing it in nature, in the woods, you'd get one harvest per year, right?
Right.
Isn't that kind of how just a normal plant works? They said with the greenhouse, if you do it correctly, you can get 5 harvests a year.
Yeah.
So obviously that's, you know, if you're in business to maximize your product, that's how you'd want to do it.
Well, and the benefit too is you're not doing it by like messing with the genetics of the plant or anything. You're just managing the growing of it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and then he was, you know, one of the things that, again, one of the takeaways was they had the, I guess they call it the bedding. You know, they put on the ground. Usually it's like a black bedding. But the problem was that absorbed so much heat and it, you know, caused a lot of, you know, I guess the big issue is fungus, pests, mold. It caused a lot more of that because of this, the black fabric. And they said using a lighter colored fabric would, you know, drop the temperature 20 degrees inside the greenhouse and you'd get a better product with that. And it was just fascinating, all of the science. Because again, this is such a new industry. It used to be, you know, one shady dude growing stuff in his basement or in his attic. And now it's becoming a legitimate business, you know, business all over the country now. So it's cool seeing all the new efficiencies and new products coming, you know, starting from the ground up, coming into the marketplace.
Yeah, and now that it's, you know, I know the two seminars we sat in, both of those people were saying it's kind of a renaissance for the industry, not just because it's going to be more readily available, but they're actually able to grow legitimately. So they can do some research. They could do some analysis, which hasn't been done before. And they're also doing it for medical purposes. So it's kind of like there's a lot of research that's going into this whole industry from a tech point of view, from a efficiency point of view, and to get the best product point of view, that it's just it's really a good sign for the industry, not just, hey man, anybody can just grow it and smoke it. No, it's they're actually putting like good science behind it, you know.
Yeah, and then also in that same, you know, the same, you know, because this, the conference was the was June 16th, was it 16, 17, 18 or just 17 and 18?
15, 16, 17, I think. It was Wednesday through Friday.
There you go, 16 through 18. And on the 16th, it was announced by Microsoft that they are partnering up with a product to offer software that tracks marijuana plants from seed to sale, which is also gigantic news because, you know, again, for the longest time, legitimate quote-unquote companies aren't going to touch this industry. And now when you have a company like Microsoft, which couldn't be any more buttoned up, straight-laced, you know, collared shirt, you know, starting to get into this arena, I mean, that's starting to show that things are changing and changing quickly.
Well, we sat in on another workshop, and there was a woman, Jessica Billingsley from MJ Freeway, and I guess they do a lot of consulting for technology, and they're actually working on some patents for some of their software. But it's an area where software generally wasn't built for point of sale, for tracking, marketing, data efficiency, data mining, like none of that was built. And now they're using tools from other industries to apply to it, but it's a huge open space for technology. So now somebody like Microsoft is coming in. I'm sure all the little companies that have been in the space already making a lot of money are, they got to be apprehensive of it. I don't think they have anything to fear because there's going to be enough room for everybody to make money, you know, but it's just, it's only it's the start of big companies coming into the industry, you know?
Yeah. And she was definitely underplaying the hugeness of Microsoft entering this when she was talking about it. Cause someone asked her that question. And I think it's probably because the company that Microsoft is working with, which is Kind, K-I-N-D, that they seem like a direct competitor to what they're producing. So they were kind of, she was playing it down a bit, you know, the importance of, you know, having someone like Microsoft in there. But yeah, like you mentioned, some of the big data that they were using to help their, you know, customers out. One of the ones was like a patient rewards program where, you know, they would look at the data, like, when are we making most of our sales? And it was always, you know, late afternoon to early evening. And like, well, how do we get more people spending money earlier in the day, kind of spread out the, you know, the crowds and, you know, get people there during the day. And they offered, you know, folks that were part of the reward program, oh, if you come in between, you know, 12 and 3, we'll give you 10% off or something, or we'll give you increased rewards. Yeah. And they said that it made a big difference in the amount of, you know, the amount of people, you know, the amount of
building the traffic they got time. Yeah.
To spread it throughout the day instead of having it just kind of concentrated at the end.
Yeah.
Which again, is something that, you know, regular industries have been doing for years. But now this industry, which is again still in its infancy, is starting to take advantage of and do as well.
Yeah, I think she had a good statistic. She said every business in the industry should be prepared to spend 6 to 9% of total revenue on new technology, which is a good benchmark if you're going into the business or, you know, you're running a business. It's, you know, it's one of those things like talking to a lot of people at that expo and the conferences, it seemed that there's a shortage of, there was, and now it's opening up, but there was a shortage of willing people to help in the industry. So here are people that believed in, you know, providing services or product to people for medicinal purposes, but they had no way, the government couldn't help them. Financing was always a problem. Now at least the government and there are organizations that are actually looking to help everybody out in the industry, which it's good to see, but it was kind of you feel a little bit bad for these companies that have been struggling. They're like, yeah, we would love to run a successful business a legitimate way and be able to easily meet, you know, compliance, because compliance changes in every state. We'd love to do that, but we don't even have the ability to get help, you know? So it's kind of sad to see, but good to see that it's actually changing. It's getting a little bit better.
Yeah, it was only a matter of time, but it's nice. Because again, it's one of those things where it's definitely a snowball effect is going to happen. You're starting to get, you know, one or two states to legalize. And, you know, now you're starting to see every year, every election cycle, a bunch more have it on their dockets. And states are starting to see, you know, state is, you know, could use a cash injection.
Right.
And now they're seeing that this is a pretty easy, minor, you know, very little negative side effects to it. At least the people who actually look at the real results and effectiveness and, you know, the real outcome of using cannabis, they're seeing that. I mean, look at Colorado. They're making more money. There's less DUIs. There's, you know, less domestic abuse, less crime. Cannabis. So this is starting to people are starting to really see the true effects of it, and not the it's a gateway drug and you'll be, you know, sucking dick for heroin in like 6 months after trying it, and you know, all that crap, all that propaganda, all that bullshit that got thrown on everybody is starting to be eliminated, and the truth is coming out. And it's great that that's happening now. And, you know, we live in a time where we have the internet. We can spread this information. We can, you know, learn and not be stuck to the rhetoric that we've always kind of had in our faces. And a lot of these companies are seeing that, and people are finding ways to get involved now so that when this, you know, legalization does finally happen across the country, they can be in there on the ground floor and they can, you know, make a considerable amount of money in that venture.
Yeah. Like,
cool.
I just like seeing the fact too, that like the industry is like putting their best foot forward to educate people. Cause I think there's three main areas of concern. One is the industrial hemp, which is no THC, no medicinal. It's for products, which now a lot of states pass, they're able to grow it. So it's giving a crop to the farmers to grow. And that's giving a cash injection to our economy. The other is the medical, which in a lot of cases, there's no THC, and it's you're just using the medicinal oils from the cannabis plant. So that's not even, you know, people say, oh, it gets you high. Well, it may or may not, depending on what is in it medicinally.
Well, yeah, there's some of them that are just the CBD, the cannabinoids, but a lot of them still do have THC.
Right. But it's
not necessarily all of them, but a lot of them still do.
Right. And there's actually some people in the industry that are fighting for, we want to be able to do research to see if we can get something that has the medicinal effect without the, you know, the psychoactive THC in there. So, but there's also, rather than take painkiller, why not use the THC versus an opiate? So there's that whole debate, which they're bringing to light, which is very good, especially medicinally. And then there's the recreational. So there's, I think there's three different areas that, like, it's good to see them separated so that people can intelligently talk about the purpose of one versus the other and not group them all together, you know, because you might be against, you know, recreational, but medicinally, there's a lot of benefits to it. It's helping a lot of people versus, you know, in industrial hemp, where why would we want to import product from China or Canada when we could just grow it here? It's just a plant. It's not, you know, nobody's going out and smoking it.
That's the most insane law. And I mean, we have a lot of insane laws on our books in America, but the fact that hemp is illegal and that we can legally import it though, and we do, is just the most ludicrous thing. They're talking about how farmers are losing their farms and how, you know, the heartland isn't how, you know, wasn't like it used to be. We have this product that could be $1 billion, multi-billion dollar crop for plenty of farmers, and it's still not legal.
And it's not just
it's
the
complete
farmers.
Insanity.
Yeah, it's not just the farmers. Like, people don't realize, like, the reason why farming is so big in our country and always has been is there are so many industries that are fed and feed into farming that it just helps our entire economy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, even like the Caterpillar, John Deere, the you know, the products, the tractors, the all the machinery required,
right.
You know,
the workers, the packaging, the everything, you know.
Yeah, the cultivation, there's so much to it. Yeah.
So, and it's good to see that we're,
yeah. This would be a huge market. This would be, you know, provide so many jobs, so much revenue for local farmers. And again, it's the, and I don't know what it is. Is it the red tape? Is it the
I think a lot of it's the
uneducated senators and congressmen.
Yeah. I mean, the classification they put on it was so detrimental that it's taken a while to unbundle that. Like, that's why they couldn't have financing for it. They can't even go out and get a loan, because if you give them a loan for, even if it's legal and they're doing it as a legal medical facility, I guess it's classified under like drug dealing, money laundering, or racketeering. Like, there's all these laws that kick in because it's not a quote unquote, you know, it's a Schedule A drug or whatever, you know, like
Schedule 1. Yeah.
Schedule 1. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And there's talks of them changing it to a Schedule 2 drug, but that also has a whole bunch of unintended side effects too, where I think it nullifies the recreational legalization.
Oh, wow.
I think I read. Yeah. That, there was some, cause again, that was like a big push, cause if they do get it to Schedule 2, that allows it to they can actually get funding for research then.
Well, that was one of the big pushes a while ago, is they were like, well, you're telling us it's harmful to people. We'd like to do research to disprove it. And they were like, well, you can't do research because you can't fund a study, because then that's like funding drug dealing. And it's like, but we want to study it for science. Like, put it in a lab, put it in, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's such a tricky area right now, because again, you almost feel like it's going to happen soon, but then now that we are in a presidential election year, you don't know what the next president's, you know, agenda or, you know, outlook or response is going to be. And, you know, again, it's one of those things, like people really believed. One thinks, you know, that Obama was going to make a big difference in this, that he was going to go in there. He was going to be that hope and change president. He was going to legalize it. But, you know, he really hasn't gone as far as he probably could have or should have.
Yeah.
But things are definitely changing for the better.
It's funny. Sure. You look at the Schedule 1 controlled substances. I pulled it up. Mm-hmm. So along with marijuana, there's heroin, peyote, methaqualone, which I don't even know what the hell that is, and ecstasy.
Sounds pretty gnarly, though.
And ecstasy. Yeah. Then you have Schedule 2, is you have your oxycontin, methadone, oxycodone, hydrocodone, codeine, opium, morphine. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's again, you look at the lobbyists and the pharmaceutical industries and the people who are greasing the palms of government, and you wonder how much of that is conspiracy theory and how much is really the reason why things are the way they are.
Well, I think they are taking it slow a little bit on purpose, because they want to decriminalize for a few years before making it legal, because they don't want to have a lot of contested, you know, arrests and stuff like that. Just so something on heroin, because heroin's becoming a big problem in like schools. And they're saying how just the laws are like, you know, you get these kids that are just out of high school or still in high school, and they get caught with heroin, and they go away, and then they come back, and they don't get help, and then they go away again, and they come back, and then they have a record, and they can't get. So it's like this vicious cycle that we're doing it to our own society. It's mm-hmm. We got to do something else about it. Like, you just got to do it differently or something. I don't know.
And well, a lot of those problems too start with, you know, all these doctors willy-nilly prescribing out these opiate painkillers for every exactly. little thing. And, you know, you get your prescription of 20 of them, you use them up, you're like, oh my God, I need more of these. You can't get a prescription again. And you go, wow, I can just get heroin, which is super cheap, and get the same effect.
Right.
So you get down that slippery slope now. Because people, I mean, maybe you're not addicted to heroin, but there's a lot of people out there addicted to painkillers.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest problems. And that's one of the big, I think, reasons I'm in favor of it medicinally, because opiates are really bad for you. They're super addictive. They're horrible for your body. The way you break them down, your body's not good. And I just, there's a lot of problems because of that, you know?
Yep.
And if you gave somebody marijuana instead of the opiate, you'd have a lot less problems. You might have different problems. You still might have problems, but it's going to be a lot less harmful than opiates, I think.
Way less detrimental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so going on into the expo, we saw some pretty cool stuff at that expo. Some of the people that were there. So we were talking to this guy, Bob Esquino, for Incredibles. And he has high quality, handcrafted infused edibles. So these are pretty much recreational, I guess medicinal too. But they look pretty cool. I mean, they have it's not just like little gummies that everybody else is doing. They have like strawberry crunch, white chocolate rice puff, and real strawberries, and THC in there, Boulder Bar, peanut butter Buddha. peanut butter butter. Let's see. They have regular gum, chewing gum. I mean, pretty cool products that they made with that.
Yeah, they were cool too. We were talking to them for a little while, and they had their extract machine they were showing, and we're talking. He was talking about all just the regulation, and then the banking issues, and the compliance requirements. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, you really just want to be out there and, you know, just selling your product, but there's just so much involved in just the process of doing so.
One thing right that now. Was cool, he's like, you know, people don't realize, but picture running your business on complete cash. Who does that nowadays? You know?
Yeah, seriously, right?
Oh, yeah, I need to buy some, you know, he manufactures. So, yeah, I need to buy something, you know, some product from a company. I need to get $50,000 in a bag of cash, you know, in cash, and bring it to them. It's like, now you look like you're a drug dealer. You know, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah, again, it's the infancy. But, yeah, to have those, again, those financial restrictions makes it a lot tougher to grow your business.
One thing was amazing, talking to him, I guess they start out one location. Now they got like, I don't know, they're in like five different states. They got a bunch of locations in like, what, 3 or 4 years? And we asked him like how business was going, how it was growing. He said the first few years they grew 1,000% each year. And last year he said they grew a little over 100%. I'm like, that's some crazy business plan. You can't argue with that in terms of making
right.
money.
Definitely doing something right.
That was nuts. Yeah, his packaging is pretty cool too. It's pretty neat to see.
Yeah, and besides them, we also talked to you know, some of the folks at Oaksterdam University out of Oakland, California, and they have their whole thing is quality training for the cannabis industry, and they are the premier cannabis college and have been providing the highest quality training for the industry since its establishment in 2007. So they have taught thousands of students how to cultivate medical grade cannabis, in addition to imparting the critical knowledge and skill sets that have prepared them for success in the cannabis industry. So they have different courses. They have their big one. They have the classic semester, which is 14 weeks. And they also have the comprehensive horticulture semester, which is also 14 weeks. And there's a lot of legal classes that go into that. But then, of course, you know, the whole, you know, soil science and greenhousing and preparation and flowering, mixing, all that stuff. It's really cool. And they were the nicest people over there at that, you know, tent or that, the table.
Yeah.
They were just super friendly and they just wanted to share the information. And they're mentioning that they're opening one up in New York too, in later this year, which is great because of, you know, I guess New York passing their medical marijuana last year.
Yeah.
So, it's really all the science and the legal behind, you know, getting into the industry is what they focus on.
Yeah. And they were talking also about advocacy, patient relation issues. And they said too, like they were one of the few colleges and universities that can grow on site. I guess they had to get special authorization for that,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty interesting.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah.
And they have a,
yeah. So then
they have a sister university in Amsterdam. That's what the Oaksterdam.
That's right. Yeah.
Oakland, Amsterdam, I guess.
It has some cool, like the university stickers you get in your car. They had the, the Oaksterdam ones for that, which was funny. They operate as like a legit place of learning, which is great. Those are the kind of things that the industry needs. You know, they need less shady actors and more people who are, you know, buttoned up with their processes and their product. And they're doing a great job educating people. So it'll be great to see them expanding their, you know, their offerings and getting more people the information they need to get into the industry.
Yeah, I like to say that. Well, and there is a medicinal benefit to marijuana too. It's not just recreational. So it is good to see that, like, you know, the knowledge getting passed down. I mean, they do it for beer and there's no medicinal part to beer, you know?
It's very true. Yeah.
They have beer classes and you get a degree in brewing, you know?
Become a beermeister.
Beermeister. That's right.
Brewmeister, yeah. All right. Anything else regarding the conference you want to talk about?
No, it's cool to see they had it at the Javits Center. It was a bigger event than I thought. And I would just imagine, like, I guess if recreational was bigger, it would be a different conference. It would be a lot bigger. If it was legal in New Jersey, it might be a little bit bigger. I mean, you know, it'd be interesting.
They to do see a big one. Yeah, they do another big one in Los Angeles too, the same conference. And I'm sure there. With California looking to legalize it this fall, that's and you know them having being the first state to get medical marijuana,
yeah,
I'm sure that conference must be 10 times the size of the one in New York.
Yeah.
Again, there's too many things people have to wait for to make happen in this area now, but out there there's so much in place already.
Yeah, maybe we were talking about the day of that, like, you know, we live in Jersey and it's legal medicinally in Jersey, but it's not like anybody can get it. It's really tough to get, you know, even people that are very sick, like that's not really one of the options that they look at right now.
Yeah. It's almost, you have to be terminal to even have access to it.
Yeah.
While in California, a lot of these places, they have doctors on staff to write you a prescription for what you need.
That's right.
Which is kind of funny, but kind of awesome at the same time too.
Yeah. Everybody knows the game there, right? That's awesome.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So I guess that wraps it up. If you guys have any questions or anything you want additional information on, we'll post some links in the show notes. You can hit us up, skibumpodcast.com, or send us an email, skibumpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. It is time for Around the Horn. Mario, what do we got first?
All right. So first up, we have Roberta Mancino documents her wingsuit flight over an active volcano using GoPro cameras. So there's not much to this article. It's mainly just video, and it's pretty awesome.
It is absolutely terrifying.
So where's the volcano? It's in Chile?
Chile, yep.
So she flies over. I mean, they got photos and then they have the video and it looks pretty amazing. You see the fire on the volcano. It's like, wow. That's a little nuts.
There's some great footage. It looks like something out of Lord of the Rings. It really does. You know what? I'm looking at the picture of her, and someone took a photo, obviously is filming her from above. And I'm looking at the shape of the wingsuit, and her wingsuit almost looks like the Flayed Man flag of the Boltons.
It does.
And then I'm looking at it, I'm like, I wonder how much longer it's going to be till we can somehow genetically modify our bodies to attach that sort of extra flesh to it, like a wingsuit.
It's going to have to be like, that's a lot of extra skin.
I know, but you could fly.
That's like a 500-pound dude jumping out of a plane after he's lost, like, you know, like 400 pounds.
Yeah.
All the extra skin just helping him go.
But yeah, I wonder if you could put skin into a bag. Like, there's got to be a way where they can. I mean, it's going to be coming in the future. You can definitely see that. But just natural skin, like, you can almost like grow and use and like shed skin like a snake.
Yeah.
So you can actually have your own skin wingsuit.
I would rather have the wingsuit, honestly. Just saying.
Really? All right. What if the skin tasted like pizza or like guacamole and you could eat it afterwards?
Why don't you just wear a big pizza? Just put a pizza on and fly out with it.
I just want it to be organic, man. I want it to be natural from your body that you could wear it or like, you know, kind of like flick a switch on your wrist and like your skin grows. So it's like a wingsuit.
I don't know about that. How about a GoPro that's a whole suit? It's a go suit.
Yeah.
All built in.
Something like that's got to happen. I just want to be able to make it from myself without needing any other products. I think that's the future.
Either way, you're still going to need a parachute.
It's almost like your body is its own organic 3D printer.
Nice.
Think about that. That's some heavy shit right there.
Heavy shit. So I just finished this book called The Rise of Superman. And
okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's about just how humans have been developing over the years, and there's this whole push into the idea of getting into flow state. And the guy that wrote the book did a lot of research, and they talk about just like, you know, advanced study in like human performance and people using everything to their advantage to like gain a performance edge and getting to the flow state. And you just look at the incredible things that people do nowadays that they didn't do years ago. And they say part of it is just that we've developed as you know, we're developing, but it's also like we're looking at things differently. We're exposed to things differently. Like, you know, you look at what little kids are exposed to, like just take skiing, for example, versus what they were exposed to when we were growing up. Nobody was thinking about even doing a flip. Now people are like, oh yeah, I saw that on the X Games. I want to try it. You know, like it's crazy. But they talk about Shane McConkie a lot and how he pushed the limits on a lot of things. And just the process mentally you go through just by being that type of person, but where it gets you, like how much you increase in your performance because you have that mentality and you push your body. And then that helps get into this flow state where you can actually do these incredible, amazing things like superhuman Superman, you know, like what's next, you know?
Yeah, you almost need to see what's possible first and then kind of take it to the next level. So you almost need to be that level setting first. And then, because you're never going to go from, you know, not be like just doing one flip to a guy doing nine flips. You know, it's never going to be that vast of a difference. It's always kind of like an incremental increase in capabilities.
Yeah, and they say too, just like socially, mentally, like you get into this idea that it's not possible to do that. So I'm not even going to try it. Whereas now, with all the extreme sports, X Games, like that's opening up people's minds to the fact that it's possible, it's dangerous, but it's possible to do. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. So that's why people are pushing the limit, saying, I want to do, you know, this incredible, you know, they were talking about one guy, he was a kid. And I think at like, he was doing in skateboarding, he was doing what Tony Hawk did at age like 12 or 13. And it's just like, well, why was he able to do that? Because he thought it was possible, you know? And it's just pushing yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty cool book. I mean, there's a lot of like science in there. And they talk about like, you know, adrenaline and getting into the flow state. And they say you can get into the flow state anywhere, but they also even say like, if you want to learn how to do something, if you can get into flow state more readily, it increases the learning capability like immensely. They were talking about training like elite soldiers. They say they get them into like this flow state and they can actually train them in like 1/8 of the time that it used to take. It's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And you know what? I feel like flow state is almost harder to achieve now because of how ADD we've all become and how it's so easy to be distracted by so many different things.
Yeah.
That makes it so much more valuable now.
Right. That's why it's not common for people to be like that, I guess.
Yeah. But that makes perfect sense to me. Yeah,
pretty cool book as a side note. And they were talking about, I was thinking about it because they were talking about how Shane McConkie went into wingsuit. That's how he was trying to do a double landing when he died. But they were saying how like these guys just push the limit so incredibly much. You know, it's like, no, it's impossible to do that. But they're like, yeah, I have to do it because I want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Going for that next level. But yeah, it is pretty incredible. It's a cool book. I'd recommend it.
Nice.
So what do we got next?
All right, next up. So hopefully you were able to attend this. It just happened June 2nd through the 5th. HearstCon was going on in Denver, Colorado.
HearstCon?
And you may be asking yourself, what exactly is HearstCon? Well, friends, I will tell you. HearstCon is a 4-day event held in Denver, Colorado that features 4 days of hearse cruising, camping, fire performances, good-looking dames, flaming sword battles, and cemetery picnics.
Wow. That's a party.
That is definitely a party. There's a
horses.
It's definitely an interesting crew of people who are doing this, but the pictures are pretty nutty. There's just hearses, like a parking lot full of, you know, some of them are, you know, pretty standard looking. Some of them are like on giant lifted tires.
Nice.
Some of them are lowered with all kind of, you know, graphics and paint jobs. There's the cruising is pretty crazy because there's, you know, there's tens of dozens of cars just lined up, hearses just lined up driving around together.
That's pretty wild.
They have like a big camp, you know, a camp scene, you know, people are hanging out, camping. There's all this like fire performances going on. It seems pretty cool. It seems interesting, that's for sure.
It's pretty nuts. The Ghostbuster mobile was a hearse, right?
No, it was an ambulance.
Oh, it was an ambulance.
Yeah, it was an ambulance. The Cadillac ambulance. I mean, really the big thing is that back window not being a window.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between like a wagon or one of those, you know, fire trucks or ambulances versus the hearse. The hearse has that funky back to it that kind of covers that back window.
So how do you think that would be if I go out on a date and I show up, pull up to pick up, you know, my date in a hearse? I think she's gonna freak out.
Well, it can go one of two ways.
She might be into
one, she'll be terrified and think you're the psychoest, grossest weirdo ever, or she's into it.
She's into it, Jerry. That's right. It's a scene,
I'm
man.
I'm not an orgy guy.
It's a scene, man.
Yeah. That's so, awesome. Yeah. So, unfortunately, we didn't report this a little bit earlier. I wish we had, but yes, HearstCon. We'll check it out next year. But it seems like a pretty interesting event. So, HearstClub.com if you want more information about that.
Very, very cool. I've actually seen hearses on some of the car shows, and some of the paint jobs they have on them are really cool.
They can do some pretty awesome stuff with it. I mean, it's a big canvas if you want to do something with it.
Yeah, you can go airbrushing going on there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Next up, we got the director of Helvetica is making a documentary on Dieter Rams. So, Dieter Rams, I guess, paved the way for design-focused companies like Apple and Muji. He made Braun a household name. So he's a renowned German designer. who did a lot in the design industry. And I guess this filmmaker, he did Helvetica. He also did Urbanized, which were really cool shows. On Helvetica, and Brian, you I think you read the book, right?
I love that documentary, Helvetica. It's such like, I mean, it sounds like it's a very like, again, because I'm a, you know, a designer by trade. And, you know, I was fascinated they made a whole documentary about this, you know, boring typeface that's everywhere. And it's just, you know, I even made, you know, Andrea watch it. And she's like, you know, this is actually really very interesting because they took this topic of a typeface and they just showed how it exists all over our everyday lives. And, you know, how we just take it for granted and how there's a value to it. And this director, like you mentioned, he does that Urbanized movie. He did Objectified. He has a great way of presenting these, you know, things that seem very, that we take for granted a lot of times, you know, the simple design and the way we see the things we see every day and just become mundane and boring and uninteresting and make them kind of, you know, show us why it's important and why it's there in the first place. And, you know, this Dieter Rams movie, I mean, he's the guy that Johnny Ive, who's that, you know, the head of product at Apple. I mean, he's said on a, you know, dozens of occasions that he is his influence. I mean, he was the guy who inspired, you know, those products at Braun. There's direct correlations with just about every single Apple product that's come out, which has always been, you know, a design focused firm that, you know, can be directly, you know, drawn to the products that Rams did back in the, you know, 60s and 70s.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And he's just an amazing, amazing, you know, his whole thing was all about simplicity. And if something is not, you know, doing something, just get rid of it. It doesn't belong there. You know, so there's always an elegance and simplicity to those products. So this movie right now is on Kickstarter and they're looking to raise $200,000 and they're ready at $153,000 with 3.5 weeks to go.
Cool.
So it's looking like it's on its way at least to getting produced, which is great.
Yeah, it's amazing to see what these designers, you think, they're just the designer. And then you look at their work and you're like, holy crap, they really did shape a lot of our lives. I mean, that documentary, Helvetica, was so cool just to see how they cleaned up, because it was really based on, I guess the big push was cleaning up the New York subway system. And the signage.
Well, that was one of the biggest examples of, you know, where it was used.
Right. And you look at something like that and you're just like, holy crap, you look at what it used to look like. And then you look at how they cleaned it up with the font and typeface. And they made it interesting when they showed it. It was like, oh, wow, this really is that important, you know.
And I actually have a book. I have a book called Helvetica and the New York City Subway System. It's this whole like super type nerdy book. But it talks about how there was three different subway systems before, you know, there was, you know, these, and, you know, when the city of New York actually took them all under, they decided to rebrand everything and make it all, you know, recognizable no matter where you were. You know, you would know that if you were at 125th Street, you know, it would look the same as it would on Canal Street, you know? So they took that opportunity to just brand every single subway station the same and bring them together under, you know, one design and one, you know, just the whole MTA.
Yeah.
And then it showed some of the old, you know, the old signage, the old product. And again, it was super confusing for people. And this made it so much easier. And they used the typeface Helvetica again, because it looked great in large, you know, large print. It looked great in small print. It was legible. And yeah, that was a great case study on, you know, in that movie about, you know, why they chose it and the impact that it made.
Yeah. And like a lot of people don't realize, well, you have to have signage so that even if you don't understand English, you're able to get around. Like it's very, people don't think about that. It's like, well, if you're from another country and you're visiting here, like you want to make sure they don't get lost either, you know, or somebody that can't read. I mean, it happens, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
But yeah, it sounds like it'll be a pretty cool movie.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So we may have to contribute to this project as well to make sure it happens.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Speaking of projects we've backed, do we have any more cake balls coming anytime soon?
I don't know. I got to see. We got to have some coming soon. This is we're in June, right?
It's been like 6 months since the last cake ball showed up.
We had March, right? May, June. Hey, it should be June. Yeah, we had like February, March, so it should be this month or soon.
Balls are due.
See, I'm gonna write a letter. Where are my cake balls?
Where are my balls at?
My balls at? What's up? All right, what else we got next?
Next up. So
I like this next one.
Again, we're recording this on Monday, June 27th. And by now, hopefully, you have seen the season finale of Game of Thrones. And
if not, you may want to pause this and come back to this part later.
Yes, you might want to do that. But the last two episodes have been two of the best episodes of the entire series so far. I mean, a lot of shows kind of lose steam after, you know, second or third season. But this season has been absolutely phenomenal.
Epic.
Last two seasons. That's the episodes have been great. And the last episode, the second to last of the season, was called Battle of the Bastards. And there was an article in Mashable talking about, you know, they were saying with Jon Snow, like, where was Ghost, his dire wolf, in the battle? And they said the reason why he wasn't in there wasn't because he was dead or there's any problems with Ghost. They just said they couldn't do it because of the budget.
Yeah.
Certain CGI budget, and they had to choose between Woon Woon, who is the giant from, you know, the giant wildling, or the direwolf Ghost. So they ended up going with using the money to create Woon Woon,
he's more critical.
Giant, which, yes, he was very critical in that scene, and, you know, unfortunately, spoiler alert, he doesn't survive the battle, but he definitely makes his impact, you know, known, and definitely takes a few people out in the process. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you don't really think about so much is how much their CGI budget is. I mean, they said for that scene, it took them 25 days to film it with 600 extra crew members, 500 extras, 70 horses, and 25 stunt people.
That's crazy.
The episode came in between 11 and 25 million, which is actually a terrible estimate because that's a really wide range.
Yeah. Well, I imagine the last episode, there was a ton of CG because there was like ship blowing up, city parts blowing up, dragons. Like, there was a lot going on.
Lots of boats. Yeah.
Even Battle of the Bastards, I think they had dragons in there too, right? That was, they were using a lot of CG for a lot of stuff, but. Still, well, how can you skimp on Ghost,
10 years ago, you couldn't have even done that without, you know, being a major Hollywood blockbuster film and having a, you know, $50 billion budget. Now, you know, they can do it for a weekly TV show, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, one weekly episode coming in at, like, more than some movies cost. That's pretty crazy for an hour-long episode.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. Pretty impressive. But yeah. You're HBO, man. Spend the money. Get the dog in there.
Well, you know, some of these cheap bastards aren't paying for their HBO subscription, so, you know, they got to, you know, find other ways to make some money. So
somebody's paying for it.
Somebody's got to, otherwise we'll have no show.
That's right. Oh, they're going to have their plenty of Game of Thrones is making money hands over fist.
It better be. They got to pay these people a lot more for the next couple. They have two more seasons left, so. You know, they better make sure people are taken care of so they show up to work every day and not get killed off.
They have two more booked, like, already negotiated?
Yep. All right, two more. Two and through.
I could see them ending it after two seasons because they're almost at a point where, like, let everybody hash it out and then, you know, one winner.
What's been so great about this? Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen is nobody wins.
Everybody
loses.
Everybody loses.
What's been so great about this season is that, you know, the end of last season, there were so many storylines, like, all over the place. All the characters were all over the place. And now they're finally starting to consolidate down. You know, people are coming together, you know, and it's starting to get so, so good. And it's like, damn it, it's over now. I got to wait 9 more months or almost 10 months till the next season starts.
Well, what's interesting is this season, they didn't even really do anything with the White Walkers. Nothing. You didn't even see him.
Well, right? Yeah, we did. The freaking Hodor episode?
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right, you saw him a little. That was just a few. They were significant.
No, there was enough of them.
Hold the door. Hey, can you hold the door for me?
And so the Night King, who still that's ranked true. As our most evil character.
He's a bad man pajama.
He is a bad boy.
I think him versus the dragon, I think the dragon's winning, though.
We shall see.
Yeah, Dragon's
it's
Age.
only going to be a few episodes away, I guess. But who knows how many years away till we see it, but it's going to happen soon.
Yeah, I guess they're probably not too far from the wall if you think about where they left everything off.
Yeah. They're
So.
marching towards it. So, such a great show. If you don't watch it, shame on you. You got to get it on there. Binge it
And
this summer.
I love how they said in the last episode, winter's here. Our father always talked about it.
Yeah, that was great. Smart-ass kids.
Smart-ass little kids. Dang. So speaking right, of dragon shooting flame, you have an
right,
opportunity. Nice segue, right? You have an
well
opportunity.
Well done.
You have an opportunity to buy a flame shooting scorpion truck from Burning Man.
So, I do.
If that's right. The bidding has started. It's bidding online, and currently, when this article broke, it was at $50,000. So they said, "Good luck." Built in 1991, it's a 28-foot international boom truck, 55-foot long. Now they have 20 to 45 feet wide. I guess it depends, like, what's extended on this thing, and 39 to 45 feet tall. I guess depending if they have the boom raised and everything. So it's a and it's named Fluffy, which I don't know why or how, but it's an exact replica of the Emperor Scorpion named Fluffy, and it boosts a computer controlled 7-gun flamethrower off the tail. So that's pretty amazing. So it's not street legal, so you have to find some way to get it to and from the playa, but yeah, it's been at Burning Man for the past 5 years, and it's time for them to move on. So they're gonna sell the truck, and who knows what they're gonna build after that.
Yeah, I just went to their eBay page, and it has been sold $50,000.
Wow, who bought it?
It just says the seller is X_Megabase.
I think Warren Buffett
Let's not
bought
say
it.
Who. I love how it says item condition used.
Used.
Yeah.
Maybe Donald Trump bought it. That's going to be his new inaugural vehicle.
Oh, it's driving around on that. Yeah. So if you want to check out Raising Fluffy, the trailer, it's on Vimeo, and they're showing how they built it. It's pretty insane.
It is pretty cool.
A 55-foot emerald scorpion.
It's like some road warrior kind of crap.
Yeah, it looks like Mad Max.
Yeah.
Like one of the vehicles from Mad Max.
It would definitely fit right in there.
It's something, that's for sure.
Yeah, just put that in Afghanistan and let it go wild.
Buck wild, yeah.
Buck wild, you know, afraid people would be. We'd have surrendered.
This thing, imagine like drive to New York City with this thing.
Just drive through Midtown.
Just sitting in traffic like, come on.
Parade. That'll be a parade float.
Oh, there you go.
Probably set a lot of stuff on fire, though. That's the only problem.
Well, sometimes, you know, things got to go.
Kind of like fireworks. You can put it on a barge or something.
Yeah, that's possible.
You put the scorpion on top of the shark boat, and you just ride it out really fast with the scorpion thing going. Scorpion and the shark together at last.
Is that like Sharknado 4?
That's right. Oh, this would be part of Sharknado.
Like Sharkpio?
Oh, that's who bought it. Whoever's making Sharknado, what are they, up to 5 or 4?
Ian Ziering bought it.
Ian Ziering bought it so he can drive it and Sharknado. That would be pretty badass.
Oh, that would be awesome.
You saved the day.
I think that's got to happen.
I like that. Or they could bring it into it could be part of the next season of Narcos. I don't know
Archer
how.
Archer Escobar. Escobar must have had a few of those things.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for the week.
That's going to wrap it up. Oh, I got a question. In terms of episode, when is House of Cards coming out again?
Didn't it just come out in February?
All right, so we had House of Cards. Narcos has to be coming soon then.
That's coming in September.
Oh, September. Damn it. Why so long? I already can't wait for Game of Thrones to start.
Game of Thrones. I know. Well, I got Ray Donovan starting now. That's a pretty good show.
Dude, this is a full-on show hole for me. This is a show hole.
They can do some reading.
No, I'm still finishing. I got another season and a half of The Americans, and then I'll be caught up.
Oh, there you go.
Homeland's got to start soon, right?
No, that's like a winter thing.
Damn it.
I don't think I even watched last season of Homeland. I got to catch up on that.
You got a good binge right there.
Yeah, I got plenty of stuff to watch. Orange is the New Black just came out last week. Got to watch that.
I'm not all into watching that right now. I'm just kind of like, eh, whatever. It's there.
I'm not really into watching anything right now. After Game of Thrones, it's like, where do you go now?
You watch Game of Thrones again. Repeat.
That's actually what I'm – I think I watched every episode twice so far. So
I always watch it twice. Watching that one again. I watch it the night of and then usually like Wednesday, Thursday, the week of.
And usually Silicon Valley I watch about three times because I freaking love that show.
Hmm.
Bachmanity.
Bachmanity.
Back in Pied Piper. I love it.
this last week was pretty funny.
This whole season was great. Yeah.
He's like, I went and I called him and I masturbated. I was like, what the hell?
But I did not finish.
Oh, that's hilarious.
At a Restoration Hardware.
That was excellent.
All right. So that's going to wrap it up for the week. Thank you so much again for listening. We really appreciate it. Please go to iTunes, subscribe, and rate us. And check us out, SkiBumPodcast.com. Send us an email, SkiBumPodcast@gmail.com. Twitter.com/SkiBumPodcast. Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast. Instagram.com/SkiBumPodcast. We'll keep posting all of our summer adventures, do any cool new news. We'll let you guys know and check out the show notes. And we will see you guys next week.
Peace. Stay happy. Stay fluting.
See ya.